On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, Jake and I will be picking the teams that intrigue us the most going into this winter. And then we will welcome a very special guest. It's Jeff Passan. You know who he is if you listen to this podcast. But if not, we can't wait for you to get to know him. And then it's Friday, so we've got the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's get to it. It's Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who thinks that, you know, maybe someone should put all of this breaking news back together again. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Is Jeff Passan Humpty Dumpty?
Yeah. Can you unbreak news? Can you put news back together after it has been broken? That is an existential scoop
Everyone
question.
Shohei Ohtani was on the plane to Toronto to try to do that.
They were like, how can we put this back together and act like we did not break this? That is a great point. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will have special guest Jeff Passan. That sounds like a good time. But before we get to Jeff, we are going to offer our own baseball analysis. We don't need the big shots to tell you what to think about this offseason. You got Jake and Jordan. And of course, it's Friday, so we're bringing you the good, the bad, the ugly on the back half. And I'm very excited for this week's good, bad, and ugly. But Jake, let's begin with the opener. As always, the exercise that I would like to do today is to pick a handful of teams, each of us. We have not prepared this ahead of time or shared them with each other, but we wanted to start looking at the offseason from a team perspective. And while we are going to spend a lot of this winter talking about the same few big market teams that are trying to sign Juan Soto, there are a lot of other teams out there that we spend time thinking about. And so we wanted to kind of give some shine to the teams that are not the Yankees, Mets, or Dodgers. However, because the Yankees, Mets, and Dodgers are really the teams that have dominated the discourse so far this winter, the Dodgers in particular, I did just write about them for Friday over at Yahoo. So I will at least acknowledge, because I was just thinking about them yesterday, for like all of yesterday, because that is part of my job. I do want to hit a couple Dodgers things here quickly before we start picking some non-big market teams. And I did five biggest questions for the Dodgers this winter. What's the one, like, what's the first one that comes to mind for you? I assume you have not read my story yet, but like, what's the number one thing for you for the Dodgers this winter?
Who translates for Shohei Ohtani next season? You know, Will Ireton was thrust into that role after Ipe Mizuhara did some, you know, trickery and malfeasance on our friend Shohei. Does Will come back in that role, or are they going to hire somebody full time who can do that? To me, that's the biggest question for the Dodgers.
Yeah, well, I am curious. I hope Will can just chill this. I really hope Will can relax this winter.
Chill Ireton.
I really hope he could be chill Ireton. As for me, I mean, I you know, you could see all five of my questions, but I just can't get over. I know we talked about it briefly, last week, but this Mookie Betts going back to the infield thing is so fascinating. Like, I think the fact that Brandon Gomes was like, yeah, this is something that Mookie wants to do. It's something that he thinks is going to be less of a toll on his body, but that we don't know if he's going to play shortstop or second base. I'm so interested that they are choosing to basically plug a hole in the infield that doesn't seem to really exist and open up a hole in the outfield where they right now don't really have any outfielders besides Andy Pages and James Outman. Remember him? And so how the Dodgers outfield kind of shakes out, I think, is every bit as interesting in what they end up doing, which I think is more likely to be, you know, signing a big pitcher and moving on. Because while they do have, you know, a million famous pitchers, how many of them are going to throw more than 100 innings? Who is to say? But that Dodgers outfield, how that shakes out, especially if they somehow don't retain Teoscar, is really interesting to me.
I think Mookie as a shortstop is even more interesting. Is it admirable for him to play shortstop and to try it and to take that challenge on? Yeah, obviously. But there are two unavoidable facts. One, he's not that good at it. And two, he's 32 and he's not going to get that much better at it. Now, Mookie Betts has proved me and you and everyone else in this baseball world wrong many, many times. So maybe he just shows up next year and wins a gold glove at shortstop. And I would be impressed, but not particularly shocked. That being said, I think he has to be thought of as the second baseman. Now, what that sure. means for Gavin Lux, I don't know.
Right.
And I'm empathetic to the idea that it is better for his body to be on the infield. And I do agree with that. And I think that because he's such a dynamo offensively that you make that call and you move Lux if you need to. But I just can't envision him as a everyday shortstop.
Yeah, I totally agree. So yeah, how all those pieces fit together, that's before we assume they're going to make some moves, I think is really interesting. But that's the Dodgers. Okay, enough about the Dodgers. Let's pick some other teams, Jake, because we are lucky enough to do this for a living, which means we get to spend our day looking at Roster Resource and Baseball Reference and Fangraphs and the like. And as we go through these teams and wait for these teams to make moves that are not the Angels, keeping us busy, but everyone else has really yet to do anything. And so at the early stages of the offseason, we're looking at these rosters and the holes that these teams have, that they already had, that they have now because of free agency. And we're thinking, what is the plan here? How are these teams going to proceed? So what we're going to do is we're going to pick three teams each that have piqued our curiosity at the outset of the offseason. And when we get to spring training, what is this, let alone opening day, what is this roster going to look like? So Jake, why don't you start us off? Maybe we'll have some of the same teams, but we'll pick six teams in total. So why don't you start us off? Who is the team you are thinking about and thinking, well, what's going on here?
The Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs were a typhoon of mediocrity in 2024. They should have been so much better than they were. And for them to finish on the outside of the playoff picture was truly an embarrassment after an offseason during which they dropped $40 million to pry Craig Counsell away from the Milwaukee Brewers in a high-profile move. It was like getting a top-end paint job on a Mazda. Because this roster was nothing life-changing or special. There are a lot of very, very good players on this roster, but there is no one who truly horrifies you if you are a starting pitcher. Seiya Suzuki is the one who I look at. I'm like, that guy's really dynamic. But this team smells like 84 wins again. And they don't really have a lot of leeway to get better on the offensive side with the pieces they have. There are no obvious holes besides catcher. Catcher is Dave Miguel Amaya, but there are no dynamic catchers on the free agent market, so they're not going to be able to fill it that way. And they have a bit of a positional clog of their own doing. Cody Bellinger doesn't really fit this roster, but he opted into his contract. Isak Paredes, who they traded for at the deadline last year, for some reason, is going to be the everyday third baseman. They have Dansby Swanson at short, Nico Hoerner at second. But guess what? Their top prospect, Matt Shaw, who's probably one of the best 15 prospects in baseball right now, who at some point next season should be playing every day in the infield, they have nowhere for him to play because they traded for Isak Paredes. Do they move Nico Hoerner? Do they trade Bellinger and try and get out of that contract for more outfield flexibility? What level of starting pitcher do they sign? Because they need someone in this rotation. Are they going to play in the Corbin Burnes, Max Fried, Blake Snell level? Or are they going to settle for somebody like Sean Manaea? And then there's the bullpen, which was horrendous all season long. And Jed Hoyer, the Pobo of this team, straight up said, I did a bad job of constructing this bullpen. Correct, Jed. Yes, you did. And so finding a way to piece together a competitive unit back there is going to be enormous for them. I'm fascinated how they go about doing that. But the fact of the matter is, Jed Hoyer has never made the playoffs as the top guy running the Cubs with a big, big payroll and big, big expectations. And I think if the Cubs stand pat this winter, fans should be furious and disappointed.
Yeah, no, you crushed it there. I mean, you hit everything there. I mean, I would just say that the log jams are even more expansive than that. Like, they've done a good job of developing talent, getting it to the upper levels, and then it's like, okay, what are we now? What? And so, where they go from here, and to your point, what they choose to invest in this winter, they have a lot of good players, and in this division, in theory, it might not take that much. this is related to my first pick. But yeah, there has to be a trade coming. There just has to be a trade coming, I would assume.
Who in this lineup is getting MVP votes? Right?
Yeah.
Who's getting MVP votes?
I mean, right. Well, so again, like Swanson was the guy they gave a boatload of money to, you know,
but
a few years ago.
Never, but he was really never that player. Like part of the reason you give Swanson that money is because of how high the floor is.
Yep.
Because he's such a good defensive shortstop and he's a great player. That's great. But like, I struggle to envision which of these players, unless you get a full healthy year of, say, a Suzuki DHing, and he gets like down ballot votes.
Well,
you need players getting MVP votes if you want to win a division, win a World Series.
Yeah.
Full stop.
I think that's valid. I mean, you know, the first version of Bellinger that they got in 2023, but I just don't know if we're going to see that again. Not to mention the fact that now he doesn't fit on this roster at all. So Cubs, that is a great pick. That is a great pick. With my first pick, I'm going to stay in division and talk about the St. Louis Cardinals. Derek Gould, one of the best beat writers we have in this industry, had a fantastic kind of dispatch, full pun intended, for the newspaper that he works for, from the GM meetings. And John Mozeliak, who is entering his last year kind of in charge of this front office, had this quote. Now, there was a lot in here, he was very transparent about kind of the Cardinals' plans. But this is kind of the quote that Derek tweeted out. And there's a lot in the story that's interesting that I'll get into. But this quote from John Mozeliak, who has, again, been in charge of the Cardinals front office, said, quote, "I think we'll surprise a few people. It's my final year, so I hope we can win a few games." Does that sound like the Cardinals ethos to you? Like,
that's the Cardinals way.
Right. Like, we are now in that brief quote tells me so much about how they are going to tackle this next season as a transition year to the Chaim Bloom period. But that's why I am bringing them up in this context, because you have a roster full of veterans, and Derek touches on this in the piece. Some with no trade clauses, some who want to stay, right? We know that Wilson Contreras wants to stay, even if he's going to be playing first base. Sonny Gray, Nolan Arenado, like, they could make very dramatic changes to this group if they really want to take a far step back and accept that 2025 is not about trying to win. And that could shift from a trade perspective, which we're really haven't talked about the trade market too much yet. There could be some far more significant moves coming from St. Louis. But I just think that because they still have a lot of good players, and if they do still try to like half run it back, and as John Mozeliak says, I hope we can win a few games. Again, like, what a weird thing to hear that from this Cardinals franchise, how far they have fallen in some senses. I do think that the general direction is probably smart. You know, we're obviously big fans of Bloom and all those things, but as it relates to this winter, I think it could make them into a team that is makes other teams' off seasons a lot more interesting than we might expect. So St. Louis is a team, because of that story from Derek, which I encourage everyone checking out, definitely has my attention. Who you got next?
I'm going to take the Orioles, the Baltimore Orioles, for a pretty simple reason, which is that it is the first winter with new ownership. David Rubenstein, who bought the team, finalizing the sale 2 days before opening day in the spring, we don't know what his level of spending is going to be. And for a team in contention with needs on their roster and free agents that fit those needs, like Corbin Burns, who was just on the team, the Orioles traditionally wouldn't even be a contender for Burns, for Freed. Forget Soto. Rubenstein is a rich mamma jamma, and he could theoretically break open the pocketbook and pay for some players. Or he could remain conservative and passive, and that would be within the MO of general manager Mike Elias, who has never offered a multi-year contract to a free agent, not offered, never given out a multi-year contract to a free agent. And they could kind of remain at the fringes of the market and have, you know, a couple upgrades here and there and sign Luis Severino and whatever, right? Or they could really go for it. And I think that it is such a telling fork in the road for this organization, because they could win the World Series next year. They could. They totally could. That's not something you could say for a long, long time. To do that, it would really help to spend some money.
Totally. Totally. And for me, with the Orioles, it's as simple as, and you can apply this dynamic to some other teams, you have one of your best hitters and your best pitcher both reaching free agency. And even if you manage to retain both of them, you know, that would be cool because they were both very good for you. But there's probably more work to be done. And so how they go beyond that is just a tall task. I mean, that's just massive amounts of production that they might not have back.
Now, you're talking about Santander and Burns, and I think it's much more likely they try and keep Burns
for
than
sure.
Santander.
For sure.
And that's just because of the way that the organizational depth is distributed. Yeah. They have a lot of upper-level outfielders who you can plug in. Like, you could tell me, I mean, if Heston Kerstad has a better offensive season next year than Anthony Santander, what would you say, 15% chance, 20% chance?
Santander just hit 44 home runs. Like, I totally, listen, to be clear,
you see my point,
I agree
right?
with you. Like, I understand that it is way less likely Santander stays because of the, like, I'm with you on that. And I'm not saying it's a bad decision, big picture. That doesn't mean that it's not a lot to try and replace. So that's really my main point.
And the payroll right now is at $100 million. It might get even lower if they non-tender a couple guys.
Yeah.
Money's there.
Yep.
Do they spend it? It could drastically reshape the market and the American League East for like the next three seasons.
My next pick is the Texas Rangers.
Oh,
this team
I
was just like so uninspired by them for the entire year. It is one of the more limp title defenses that we've seen in quite some time. Now, we knew, right? The reality was, were they that good, as unbelievable as they looked for the last, you know, obviously October 2023? No. But I think we thought they could be a little better than what they showed us in 2024. More notably, they did so little last winter, right? We know they spent big to build this roster up to get to a point where they could win a World Series. But then last winter, they were like, no, we're not doing anything. This time, do you try to change something? Do you try to actually start spending again? Or do you trust and say, that season sucked, but we still have a bunch of good players and we'll be fine, especially once we get Evan Carter back and, you know, Wyatt Langford, full season of him, feeling more comfortable, fine. But the most obvious thing that they have to figure out is something I tweeted about a couple of days ago, which is the fact that like half of their innings are gone. I mean, the number of pitchers that they have hitting free agency at the same time is pretty staggering. And so maybe they keep Eovaldi, maybe they keep, you know, Kirby Yates or whatever. But it is a ton of arms. And yes, they have done a much better job of kind of developing pitchers recently. And hopefully we'll see Kumar Rocker and Jack later, and DeGrom will be back and so on and so on. It is still so many innings that they have to replace and is going to put them in a difficult position if they are going to get back to a point where we're like, yes, this team can definitely contend. So I don't want to totally discard them, but that is another team that I feel like could be more active. Because remember, Chris Young, before last winter and ultimately, you know, this weird deadline that they did this past July, they're moving and shaking, right? I mean, this is a team that was trying to make stuff happen. Let's see if they get back to that this year to try to get back into a contender mix.
Payroll's at 182 right now. They finished last year 227. So there is room there to go out and pay one more arm, and they certainly could use it. My last pick is the Washington Nationals.
Mm-hmm. Good pick.
It's time. It's time.
Come on, guys.
It's time.
Let's go win. Come on, Mike Rizzo. I know you haven't been enjoying this version of this post-World Series rebuild awful team. They were not that bad this year. But they were not
that good either.
They were not that good. Yeah.
Look.
Long way to go.
Here's the deal, right? Their estimated payroll right now is $87 million. $35 million of that is for Steven Strasburg. Okay. $35 million of the $87 million.
$35 million for that is not for Patrick Corbin, who is finally off the books.
He's finally off the books. This team has to go now. Has to. And they may not make the playoffs next season, but they gotta start trying. the pieces are there. CJ Abrams, Cassino participation aside, is a really good player. Was an all-star. I know he fell off in the second half, but that's a cornerstone. James Wood, Dylan Cruz, they're there. You need to put the pieces in place as these players are coming. And the Nats know this. The Jason Wirth signing, to me, exemplifies this perfectly. You spend money as you're starting, not after, so that you can embed that culture of winning as you get better. Now, what does this team need? They need like a game-changing bat in the middle of the lineup. Like, they need someone who just rakes. Pete Alonso is a perfect fit for this team.
Yeah.
Christian Walker, player like that. Alex Bregman fits sublimely.
Yeah.
And they really need another starting pitcher. Someone with adult behavior. I know that you could look at the rotation as it is. Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker, DJ Hurst, Cade Cavalli. And you could squint and you could be like, I like all those guys. Guess what? Not all five of them are going to be really good. That just doesn't work that way. Baseball's too hard. Go out, pay Sean Manaea. Right?
Yeah.
This they is a need, team.
Yes. Like one that, big bat, and then that there is depth in the starting pitching market that you don't have to go get a Corbin Burns, right? There are other arms there that could really, really help you. So I'm totally with you.
Nats. Open the cannon attitude.
Come on, Nats. I was going to do Toronto, but I'm going to stick with the theme that you're kind of getting at in a different way and go with Detroit, because we haven't really talked about Detroit yet.
Mm.
The Tigers are my last pick just because I don't feel like we've talked about them at all since the season ended. And that's obviously another team where payroll is exceptionally low because they have one of the youngest teams in Major League Baseball.
80 million.
And it's a classic case where,
$80 million, 25 of which is for Baez and 10 of which is for Kenta Maeda.
Exactly. So, but we do not know if this next generation of Illich owners wants to go for it in a real way. But we aren't necessarily talking about spending at the top of the market. Like, but you got to enforce this young group. And to me, what's so interesting is what spots do they identify? Even though they have all these fun young players that we all just watched in October. Oh my gosh, what a scrappy young group. So impressive that they were able to put this together. All these pitchers that they kind of mishmashed together and got a bunch of outs and almost got to the ALCS. Very impressive. But at the end of the day, and I mean, I felt this watching them. I was like, man, like this is amazing. And God bless Matt Vierling, but my guy can't be batting third here. Like there's just at some point the talent gap, even against Cleveland, let alone what it would have looked like against New York, would have felt so stark. And yes, they have one of the best pitchers on the planet in Tarek Skubal, and they have some really good, useful pieces. Meadows was really impressive. We know what Kerry Carpenter is capable of in very specific situations. But beyond that, I just don't really know what they actually have as far as a core good baseball team. And that's where, like we said with the Nats in a slightly different way, let's see it. Let's see some action here. Maybe Bregman makes more sense than we all thought. Oh, maybe, you know, Correa would reunite with Hinch. I think that might make more sense for Bregman here than it does for them. I know they have some other infielders coming up. And then you could also argue that they also really need, you know, an actual starting pitcher to, you know, pair with Skubal. I think you could say that makes even more sense considering the amount of, you know, kind of position player depth they have coming. What do you think of Detroit?
It's a decision of who is fundamental and who is supplementary. Which of these players are playing every day? Which of these players are on your bench and which of these players are you trading? And those decisions will impact the next 5 years of Tiger baseball. Because if you, okay, so here's just a lazy example. If I'm the Tigers, I'm spending someone else's money, I'm signing Bregman, and I'm trading one of Colt Keith or Chase Young, right?
Well, Keith, which one of those, extended, which tells
I
me.
I know they extended.
Now they could still trade him, right? But
sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still a good deal for him.
Yeah.
But like, which of those guys do you believe in? You trading Andy Abania? Is it like, I know he's 31. Yeah. Which of these players do you think are the core? And we will find that out by who they choose to bring in.
Yes.
If they sign Anthony Santander, for instance, and they move Matt Vierling to third base, or they have him as a bench bat, right? We'll see how the puzzle kind of comes together. Those are our teams that we are compelled by. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will ask ESPN's Jeff Passan who compels him, as well as digging into the concept of breaking news. We'll be right back. be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. We are now very excited to be joined by a special guest by the name of Jeff Passan, formerly of Yahoo. We didn't replace him, although, you know, you can, we'll tell that narrative. It's ESPN's Jeff Passan. Jeff, welcome to Baseball Barbercast.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here. How are you?
I'm fine, Jeff. I'm just fine. Not
Jake,
any better.
Jake, you are always fine. That's one of the things I love about you. You always bring good energy wherever you're at.
Thank you. You know, it's important to stay steady in this business and take things one day at a time. Never too high, never too low.
Jake's the same guy. He's just the same guy, whether it goes 0 for 4 or 4 for 4. I mean,
you know what I hate? You know what I hate about that cliche? It's true. Like, it's so boring, but it's actually like a really good way to live.
And this was the thing with Aaron Judge, especially this year. It was like, how many different ways can we write that he's really reliable and steady? Because he is. And when you're on the Yankees, you have to be. If you're running the show, you don't want some volatile kook in charge of the Yankees clubhouse. And thankfully, that's not Aaron Judge.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like anathema with sports, right? It is antithetical to how we as fans consume games. We don't want steady. We want spectacular. And we ride these up and down waves, and it's what gives us life. And we loathe the lowest moments, but we live for the highest ones. And the whole time, they're just looking for a 60-degree day. And like, Stringer Bell would yell at them for this.
Yeah.
But it is 100% true.
Yeah. None of us are tuning in for even keel. that's what these ball players are aspiring to.
By the way, I understand for all the Wired folks out there that Stringer talked about a 40-degree day, but it's still like a 60-degree day is what athletes are looking for all the time, because you can still do like decent things, but you don't have to be great every day. You just hope that
you know what you can do on a 60-degree day? Golf. And that's all these guys really want to do. Earlier on in this podcast, we each drafted a handful of teams that compelled us this winter that we are interested in. We have spent a whole lot of time thinking, talking, writing about the Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees, because they hold the keys in a lot of ways to the winter we're about to have. But we wanted to give some shine to a couple of other teams. So, Jeff, let's kick that question to you. I don't want to tell you who we selected. Who are some teams that are tickling your fancy right now?
I think at the top of the list, it's the Boston Red Sox. They are close to something. And we're about to see what that something is. You know, they have hitting prospects, which is the most valuable currency in all of baseball. They have money to spend, which is actual currency.
Which is the most valuable currency in the world.
Yes, yes.
Of life.
And they seemingly have a president or a chief baseball officer in Craig Breslow who has support from ownership, which is something that financially, at least, has been lacking in years. So Red Sox are fascinating to me. The Detroit Tigers, coming off of a really surprising to some season. I felt stupid midsummer, but I picked the Tigers to win the American League Central last year. Like I thought they were going to do it on the back of their pitching, and it turns out all their starters were either out or replaced by bulk folks. But the Tigers, again, they have money to spend. They have positions to fill. And the question is, are they going to be able to go out and get a high dollar guy and convince him to come? And then for the third team, we could go like so many different directions here. You could say the Orioles, a team that underachieved last year. You could say the Mariners, a team that underachieved last year. You could say the Pirates, a team that seems to have the pieces and parts in place, but little to no support from ownership. You could say the Diamondbacks or even the Padres. Let's go. You know, let's go with the Chicago Cubs.
Okay, this is great. I picked the Tigers and he picked the Cubs, so we're good here. I want to circle back to Boston, but hit me on the Cubs first.
I just wonder like where the Cubs are at the tippy top levels right now. How is Tom Ricketts approaching this season? Because on one hand, the Cubs payroll, I think right now is around $170 million. So they've clearly got room to spend. But I haven't gotten a sense from people in the industry that they have any inclination to go and give big dollars out this winter. But what the Cubs are lacking at this point, guys, is star-level players. They have a bunch of good baseball players. Do they have any great ones, though? And when you don't have great baseball players, can you win championships that way? And you mix that all in with the fact that Jed Hoyer is in the final year of his contract right now. And Craig Counsell is coming off of his first season when the team that he left absolutely stomped him to win the division. Like, Jordan, I see the gleeful look on your face right now.
I said three or four of the things you just said, and it is very reassuring to me that I guess either neither of us know ball or we both do. I
probably neither.
Think it is notable that Hoyer has never made the playoffs as the number one guy. He has not. And that clock is ticking. And I pointed this out. Who on this offense is getting MVP votes? Because you need to have one or multiple players that are that good.
Yes.
And they simply don't have that. And you can't envision them adding a player like that unless they spend. And even if they spend, they have to trade somebody else because those positions are blocked.
Yep.
Bellinger doesn't fit the roster. And honestly, Isak Paredes doesn't really fit the roster either.
Who would you rather be right now, the Chicago Cubs or the Kansas City Royals? Because we're talking, this is the star versus depth debate, right? Mm-hmm. The Royals, I think Bobby Witt unequivocally is better than any Chicago Cub right now. I think Cole Reagans is better than any Chicago Cub right now.
Yeah.
Long term, Salvador Perez is not, but short term, is there somebody that on the Chicago Cubs you would rather have than Salvador Perez?
I might rather have Seiya Suzuki, but you make a
maybe. I'd like to see him play 155 games regularly.
Yeah.
Like
you might not.
The star thing is interesting to me because I understand why you bring up Kansas City because it's more of an extreme example, and we did just see them kind of with on the backs of the stars get to a really impressive level. Now, we shouldn't discount what the starting pitching did for them because obviously that carried them a long way. But let's just keep it in division, right? I mean, Milwaukee, when you looked at the roster, the reason why we discounted them is because, there's all these unknown quantities. But they talk about stars. I mean, they have a guy who has a case for being the best catcher in baseball in William Contreras, right? And then someone who is ascending very quickly into star status, which is Jackson Churio. And then they have kind of all the other pieces that fit together. And Yelich was playing like a star, by the way, before he got injured, right? So all of those guys were at a level that all these Cubs guys are just like just below that. And it's just not quite good enough. And the Cubs, again, it's like, okay, well, what's so frustrating, I have to imagine, for Cubs fans, and this was even true last year, is this division, and maybe we're still disrespecting Milwaukee by saying this, but this division still feels winnable, right? It should still be there for you to take advantage of if you press those right buttons. And I think that for Jed Hoyer in particular, you have a lot of dynamics of GMs who are like trying to toe the line between being aggressive and being smart and spending the money. And sometimes that is the owner deciding how much they're spending. And sometimes that's the GM saying, I can do it with this, I can do it with this, whatever. And so I agree. The Cubs are way up there for me.
I want to hop back to something you mentioned earlier, Jeff, one of the teams is the Orioles. And part of the reason I think that they're really interesting is because we have zero idea what David Rubenstein's going to spend. Do you have any indication what that's at, where he's going to be on the Bob Nutting to Steve Cohen spectrum?
I think they're going to be aggressive with Corbin Burnes. I think they recognize not just the talent there, but the necessity and how much different this team that already is lacking in starting pitching looks without him. I think they will probably be in on Blake Snell. An interesting thing to me, though, and this isn't going to play itself out until a little bit later in the winter, I don't think. But I do wonder if there are going to be players on some of the shorter term, higher ceiling guys. Are they going to get a Walker Buehler, a Shane Bieber, a Max Scherzer, a Justin Verlander? I would be willing to bet that one of those four guys ends up in Baltimore, because it aligns with how Mike Elias runs a baseball team. It aligns with them financially in that they don't have to go out and spend gobs of money to get a pitcher, when we all know that pitching is the most volatile thing in baseball. And it gives them ceiling. And I think we saw this a little bit over the winter when they went and got Craig Kimbrel, right? There were other options out there that they could have signed for multiple years, and they went with the guy who has ceiling on a one-year deal. And for a little while there, it looked like it was working out wonderfully, and then it wasn't. And it's that strategy that I have questions about its sustainability. When you're the Los Angeles Dodgers, you can afford to do that. You can afford to pay a guy for two or three good months because you have enough depth and enough resources devoted in order for when it or if it falls apart, it to be okay because there are other guys there. I mean, we should be marveling at the Dodgers still. I understand that they had a $300 million payroll. They went through a rotation and a half of good big league pitchers who wound up on the injured list by the end of the year. Like eight guys. And they still had enough there to win the World Series. The Baltimore Orioles do not have that. And so when you take that strategy of having volatile guys that you're bringing in, guys, you know, there are some guys who you pay $15 million a year just because you know they're going to give you 165 decent innings. There are also guys that you pay $15 million a year because they may give you 175 great innings, but there's an equally good chance that they're going to give you 90 mediocre ones. And to me, the franchises that can do that, that can take the risk on those guys, are the ones that have the depth, and Baltimore just doesn't fall in that category at this point.
On the pitching side, at least. You know, I think they can't afford to be wrong in the way that the Mets can just have like $80 million of dead money sitting around on their payroll.
The last thing I would say about Baltimore, then I want to hop back to Boston, is, again, the parallels with Kansas City is also interesting from an ownership standpoint, right? We saw them come in and prove it's like, oh, well, they'll never spend. And then not only do they spend, what's the most important thing they do? They give Bobby Witt Jr. the world, right? And there's obviously some candidates on Baltimore's roster where you could imagine, you know, Rubenstein thinking, okay, let's make sure at the very least we have Gunnar Henderson here for the long term, right? Or Adley Rutschman. I know Adley's in a bit of a weirder spot right now after the season he just had, but still, right? That's something, it may another avenue to kind of flex your financial might that is a good way to you know, ensure the fan base realizes that you're going in the right direction. But again, they are going to need additions in addition to just kind of keeping the guys in-house. Let's go back to Boston before we spin it to our existential discussion about breaking news. Because to me, what is so amazing about the discourse about the Red Sox is, before the Mookie Betts trade and, you know, tweeting jokes about the luxury tax, wow, that aged horribly in a million ways. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can Google it. The notion that the Red Sox would be in spending big money in free agency is like, yeah,
of course
the Red Sox, right? We have been doing this not nearly as long as you have, because you're old, Jeff. But like, I, you know, I remember when the Red Sox were signing big free agents. It wasn't that long ago. And so as we bring it into whether it's Soto or other guys, like, it shouldn't be that impossible to believe. And yet because of the recent seasons, everyone just laughs at them and be like, oh, the Red Sox, yeah, you're going to try. You're going to say we tried and then finish second on all these guys. But I do think whether it's Soto or not, like, it does feel like now's the time they kind of flip that switch back towards being aggressive.
I mean, they kind of have to right now, right? Yeah. They've been backbenchers in the American League East for upward of half a decade at this point, minus one really good year. And the Boston Red Sox, the modern Boston Red Sox, should not do that. There's absolutely no reason that they should not be competing for an American League East title every single season. Don't tell me about the Yankees. Don't tell me that the Rays are better run than them. Don't tell me that the Blue Jays are going to... And by the way, the Blue Jays probably deserve like a place in this conversation because they are going to get a guy this winter. I don't know if it's going to be Juan Soto. I think it certainly could. I do not discount them. Like this is not something that they're just doing to get their fan base excited, because you know if they don't get Soto, it's just going to be like another dagger after last winter and the Robert Herjavec plane. This has a chance to be the best winter for Toronto Blue Jays fans or the absolute worst. Yeah. But the Red Sox, everything has lined up for them at this point, except their ability to develop starting pitching at a big league level. You know, Brian Baio's good. Carter Crawford is a perfectly fine big league starter, but they don't have a dude. And it's why they're talking with Blake Snell. And it's why they're talking with Max Fried. But at the end of the day, like, this is the Soto winter, is it not? They can go out and trade for Garrett Crochet if they want, because they have managed to turn Marcelo Meyer, a top five pick, into a top 15 prospect. They have turned Kyle Teal, a first round pick, into a top 75 prospect. They have turned Roman Anthony, a second round pick, into top 10 prospect. Christian Campbell's the big one.
It feels like what Baltimore had, you know, a year, 2 years ago. It's a very similar group.
Justice for Kai and Bloom, baby.
That's warranted and it's reasonable. It's why the St. Louis Cardinals are lucky to have Kai and Bloom in place right now, because 100%. For all of the things that went wrong there were processes that were in place that actually succeeded and set the Red Sox on this course. But they have to be intelligent about how they do things, because getting stars, it's not easy. Like, you have to sell them that this is a real vision. And I think that's one underrated element of what Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer did in Chicago in 2015 when they convinced John Lester to sign. They sold John Lester that these kids who are coming are championship caliber and are going to be part of something special, and we need you here to lead that. And, you know, if you're selling Juan Soto, I think it's very simple. You adore the moment, right? You crave what October brings. We have won more championships in the past quarter century than any franchise in baseball. And so it's clear that we can win and have won here. You get to be the guy. You get to walk in and be the fulcrum of this franchise. And so if you have that desire, you get that here. And by the way, you're going to be surrounded by hitters who are extremely talented, who you can help turn into stars. And you can be that guy that others were to you, that Bryce Harper was to you, that Anthony Rendon was to you, that when you're surrounded by great hitters, it only encourages you to be even greater.
Yeah, 100%. I think, again, like, if we hadn't been talking about the Red Sox the way that we had because of how they've acted the last few years, all of this would make them, it'd be like, yeah, duh. Like, of course. And yet we're still kind of getting.
And by the way, you're going to hit 700 home runs if you play at Fenway Park.
Oh my God. Yeah. People, that's the thing. People say, oh wow, the short porch is so perfect for Juan Soto. No, the
left
green
field.
Monster
yes.
is yes. perfect for Juan Soto yes. because that is where he is trying to hit the ball. It's also so funny, right? It's like they've already invested in Rafael Devers as this face of the franchise, which is worthwhile. And Rafael Devers is amazing. He is like a diet version of Juan Soto in terms of just like unbelievably gifted, talented, left-handed Dominican hitter that is just like a guaranteed, you know, 130 OPS plus. Juan Soto is that and that much better.
Yeah, but like 160. Yeah,
exactly.
This was the point I made about Soto during a couple of pods ago is I think the most important Soto season is 2023 because it shows you the floor. Yeah. And that the floor when he's in San Diego having
the
a crappy time, yeah, dude,
basically
that's the thing. That's the
which
thing.
which is obviously amazing. So anyway, okay, Jeff, last topic for you before we let you go, because this is something I sort of introduced to you when we were hanging out during the postseason, and kind of gets at just the nature of your job and how we interact with Jeff Passan over the course of a winter. Of course, we're fortunate enough to get to know you over the years that we can just, you know, text and bother you. But most people, when they consume your work, it is, of course, on ESPN, on TV, but really through the social media platform. And with that comes the editorial decisions to how you frame the news that you are breaking. Most notably, that word breaking. And something that we have become very entertained by, not just with you, but across the baseball reporting space, is what qualifies as an all caps breaking. Because not all news is now, again, the point, which we can get into, is that you are indeed that it is breaking news, that you are the first person with the information. I imagine that is the root of it. But the all caps element tells me that something, there is a bar to clear in terms of impact for the move, the signing, the trade, the firing, that has to clear for you. So what I throw to you, Jeff, is this something you had ever thought about before I broached it with you during October? And how has that kind of philosophy of all caps breaking evolved over the years for you personally, the reporter?
I think about it every time I use it. Because, listen, one thing you know being on social media is it can be and will be unrelenting if you do something that is stupid, wrong, gosh. Like there's any number of adjectives that can get you in trouble, right? Like, are you overselling this signing that's not worth a damn is breaking? And so I run through in my head, okay, what's the threshold? Is it a number of years? Is it a number of dollars? Is it a team particularly? Like, there is no actual formula. It is kind of like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. You know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And usually my radar on it is pretty good. But I imagine that throughout the years, I have some all caps breakings that I might regret.
Jordan, to the tape.
So, listen, Twitter search.
By the way, for everyone who's listening right now, to be abundantly clear, sometimes when you go on shows, like, you get prepped and they tell you, I have no idea what's coming right now.
Neither do I.
And I am terrified by it.
Well, again, like, we could do this all day, and I don't want to take up more of your time because you have news to break, of course. So I don't want to go all day. But, you know, one of the first times I started thinking about this was actually a year ago when you gave an all caps breaking to the Mariners signing Mitch Garver. And this was on Christmas Eve.
That's why I did it.
And yeah, this tweet also included Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to him, Mariners fans, who gets to celebrate an unexpected gift, and everyone else. Mitch Garver wasn't very good, but
Garver probably would not have been a breaking on December 19th.
Okay, so the date influenced that.
Oh,
that is
hell yes! Like,
that is very interesting
because think like I part of this role is understanding where you exist in the space and economy of this industry. right? Yep.
And no one is expecting a move on Christmas Eve.
No one. And here's the thing. I get that when people see the word breaking, it's kind of exciting. Like it adds a little bit of gravitas. But what I also understand is the scarcity principle. You can't overuse breaking. I can't do breaking on everything because then breaking. And here's the thing. In the annals of breaking, yeah, Mitch Garver is probably toward the lower end of this was warranted. But the fact that I was doing it after having just cooked like a decadent and delicious meal for my family and enjoying hanging around them and like all the good vibes surrounding me. I mean, I was a Jew on Christmas. It was great.
Yeah. No, that's been there. One more. Again, we could do these all day. This one is funny. Again, also one that ages kind of interesting. This is November 16th, 2021. Breaking, all caps. Right-hander Noah Syndergaard in the Los Angeles Angels are in agreement on a one-year $21 million deal. Another one that ages. It's tough.
Here's why that's breaking. I'll speak for Jeff. That's a big name. That's a name that people know.
Bingo.
Big name.
Big name who had been in New York. Easy one to me.
Big name who had been in New York. Okay. And this brings me to the team element to this, which I think is interesting. And I want to kind of finish on this one because now I want to apply it to this winter. Now, can we hold you to this? No. But if we look at this market right now, where on the free agent rankings, where are we approximating the line? Here is an example of one. If Jurickson Profar returns to the Padres, that does not feel like an all caps breaking. I'm just speaking for
it
myself.
Is. Okay? It is. You're hold wrong about is. That. Yeah, you're wrong.
Okay,
that.
Okay. Yeah. Because what I was about to say is if Jurickson Profar goes anywhere else, that would feel like more significant. But okay, so Jake, you disagree. So you think Profar is above the line. Okay, so.
Yeah, dude. He was just a main character in the playoffs. And if he returns to the team where he was pissing off all the Dodgers fans, of course it's breaking.
Okay,
news.
All right. So we're working our way through this. You say Kikuchi. Let's okay.
He's gonna get $80 million. That's above that's above the financial line.
All right, awesome. We're finding it. We're finding it. We're
calibrated. Randall Grichuk.
Randall Grichuk just had the best offensive season of his career. Now, this is a great example. If the Yankees sign Randall Grichuk, it's probably an no. Ooh.
No.
Okay. Okay. No. This is good.
It's a 1 year deal. It's a 1 year like.
Oh, I don't know. Randall Grichuk might get 2 years.
Here,
can I say another thing about this? One more just philosophical thing, and then we'll let Jeff go. I do think that trades are basically easier to get all caps breaking because we're not expecting them ever,
right?
You know, especially in the winter. Whereas we know that you know. Kikuchi's going to sign at some point. You know, the free agency, some of these guys, especially some of the ones that we expect a reunion with, it's like, yeah, they're going to sign. We know they're going to sign at some point. Whereas the trades, those are the ones where I'm like, when I read them, I'm like, whoa, when that falls in all caps.
Yeah, but it still has to be, I think I haven't thought this through in depth and detail, but I think the trades might actually have a higher standard for using all caps breaking. And here's why. With contracts, you're just as surprised by the dollar sometimes. And so it's an added element beyond what the player's talent is. But you also have the possibility of having two interesting teams involved. So I suppose that evens things out.
Yeah.
So,
oh, man.
So as I scroll through our top 50 list, Jordan, it becomes pretty obvious to you, really. Paul Goldschmidt, that's all caps breaking. Right. The one who I am curious about is Justin Turner. Well-known name. Had a way better year than you think. He feels like it is team dependent. The team dependent players on this list are the most interesting to me and represent where the line is. And to me, my mind right now, this winter, I think Justin Turner signing with the Yankees and having to shave the beard is breaking. But if Justin Turner goes to the Royals, I don't know if that's breaking.
Goldschmidt is an interesting one because you can put in like former MVP into the tweet, well, yeah, which like has the heck.
Goldschmidt's a yes, just because the name and the fact that he's been with the Cardinals as long as he is.
Yep. Yeah. But I don't think it's as simple as just like finding the line within the rankings. I do think there's probably some nebulous elements there.
My last point, Jeff, is this. Paul Goldschmidt and Juan Soto deserve something different. They do. And it almost feels to me that there should be something beyond all caps breaking. Maybe broken, question mark, or comma. Like, I think
could I like rev up? Could I like do breaking?
Right, if tweets can come with like sound effects or like or no, you know what it is? It's like when you can text, you can like send with emphasis or like with confetti. That's really what we need.
I like the idea of sound effects. Now. Like when a really weird or surprising Airborne. Deal happens, yeah. You just come in like, huh? Like.
Yo, we've had a good number of those. But I mean, again, Chris Bryant to the Rockies was I'll never forget that one. That
breaking?
One, that one definitely required another. This feels like maybe the German language can offer us something more than this. I'd be curious if there's maybe some more flexibility in other languages. But anyway, Jeff, we have taken up more of your time. I hope that we have successfully, you know, psyched you out or into either way overusing it or way underusing it this winter. But we appreciate your time. I know that I trust your calibration.
Anything you'd like to plug, Jeff?
Yeah.
Where can people find your work?
Go to ESPN.com. For anyone who
go to Yahoo first. Go to Yahoo first.
For now, they did that enough years. For anyone who is balking at an ESPN Plus subscription, please don't, because all the good stuff that I write is on ESPN Plus right now,
lying.
And you'll
he ain't lying.
I'd like to think that it's worth it. And tune into all the ESPN platforms and see my ugly mug in real time.
Well, we can't wait to see your ugly mug at the winter meetings in Dallas. Jeff Passan, you are fantastic. We appreciate the time, and go break some news, my friend.
Just taking it one day at a time, boys.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It is time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing ugly, weird, odd, bizarre, thought-provoking from the week that was. I will begin. And I will begin with my good. We did a little segment on our last episode where we read some quotes from the season that was, and we laughed at them. And the best quote, to my opinion, was Miles Michaelis calling the Dodgers checkbook baseball and the Cardinals Midwestern Farmers. I posted this video to our Instagram thinking that it would be entertaining for the masses. And it was, Jordan, except the masses included Miles Michaelis, who commented on the post saying, "Gotta say, those words didn't taste good when I had to eat them." And the reason this is good is because I think a lot of players would be mad at us for dunking on them. It seemed like Miles Michaelis was at least a little chill about it.
He's a goofy goober. I'm not surprised. I know he was like sort of serious when he said that quote before opening day 2024, but it was also such a ridiculous quote that required a certain level of goofy personality. And I think that that is Miles Michaelis, so I'm not surprised. My good this week is Dave Sims being hired by the Yankees. Dave Sims, one of the voices of the Seattle Mariners since 2007, will now succeed John Sterling, of course, retiring this year as the radio voice of the New York Yankees. And this is good because Dave Sims is the man, and now more people get to know that Dave Sims is the man. But I got to say, I mean, in the words of Casey Musgraves, whose concert I very much enjoyed a couple nights ago, I am happy and sad at the same time. This is a bummer. Dave Sims is the, of course, I'm very lucky that the Mariners also have, you know, Rick Riz and Aaron Goldsmith, of course, friend of the show. I will still enjoy watching Mariners games. But Dave Sims, man, I mean, this is all, again, as he's been with Seattle since 2007. I become a Mariners, you know, fan around 2011, 12. So like, this is all, this is, I mean, the Felix Perfect game, right? Like that's Dave Sims, like that call I will always remember. And for him to kind of make it all the way to them getting back to the postseason and being a part of those calls, it was one of those funny things where everyone's posting like, and I get, I understand that like, this is a good thing. Although of course the part of me rolls my eyes when he gets announced as the, as hired, and all the Yankees fans are like, this is who Dave Sims is. I'm like, yeah, no, I know. Because it's like the biggest fan base is now going to be exposed to Dave Sims in a very real way. Obviously, it's a cool story for him. It's very good. This is someone who, you know, Philly native, but really grew up early in his career, was working in New York. He worked at WFAN from 1989 to 1993. So I know Dave's super excited about it. And he's always been extremely kind with his time and whenever I've gotten to talk to him. So Dave's awesome, and I'm really happy for him. And I will miss having him call Mariners games, but it is cool.
I hope he doesn't lean on bits for home runs as much as John Sterling did.
Thing, yeah. I don't think he's going to change anything of what he's gotten used to. And it can't possibly be any goofier than John Sterling. What's your bad?
So the Premier 12 tournament is going on right now, which is a pretty radical international baseball tournament with a lot of really good players, both interesting American prospects playing for Team USA and Rich Hill and international guys. Go ahead, Jordan.
Well, it's my Ugla, so this is good. This is a good, it's a good lead-in. Rich Hill's my Ugla, but I understand why this is your bad, so go ahead.
The reason this is my bad is because I woke up this morning and I saw that Japan was playing Korea with like a bunch of really good players involved, and I was like, I want to watch this. How do I watch this? Turns out to watch it, I need to pay $15 a month to a streaming service called DAZN, D-A-Z-N, a company that we used to work for very briefly in 2019 and 2020, a company that got in and out of the baseball space before you could learn how to pronounce DAZN. And it was not to like, yes, like you pay for things that are worthwhile. I understand that. They bought the rights, whatever. But for me, on a very selfish personal level, waking up and being like, I have to pay DAZN? Nope. Not watching that. Not paying for it. Godspeed to the Premier 12.
Totally fair. More on the Premier 12 in a second. My bad this week is the first round of the 2016 draft.
Ooh.
Jordan, who gives a crap? What are you talking
you
about?
You do.
I do. Why do I care? Matt Theis was DFA'd by the Angels after they signed Kevin Newman. And Matt Theis, who was the 16th overall pick in the 2016 draft, I was like, oh, man, Matt Theis, tough pick. That didn't go so well, right? And then
good
you
pick.
Pull... And then you pull... I wouldn't say it was a good pick, but you pull up this first round. I mean, this is that these players should be like hitting their peak. Like this should be a group of players that are like, here they come. These are the stars of the league. And while there are some of those in the second and third and fourth rounds, Pete Alonso, you know, Corbin Burns, Gallen, Bieber, Bichette, this first round is like catastrophically bad. And I'm not just going to start naming names here because we don't have time, but it is like a stunning collection of disappointments. The only player in the first round, the first 40 picks, who is like definitively trending up is Cole Reagans, I would say. Like Will Smith is still a very good catcher for the Dodgers, but like trending up, like you're feeling great about this guy. It's really only Cole Reagans, which is an astonishing thing to say about a first round of a draft. So Matt Theis, you are not alone as far as disappointing first round picks in 2016.
And the reason this is even more bad, this is our year. These are the people who are our age, the college players true. In this draft.
These are 1995.
These are the 95s. Yeah, these are the class of 2017 guys who were drafted as juniors in 2016.
Yeah.
If I had been a baller, this would have been my draft, man. And I look at this first round, I'm like, man, maybe I did have a chance.
Would you have been more likely to make it to the big leagues than, you know, Robert Tyler and Delvin Perez? Who's to say? All right, let's get to Ugla. What you got?
The Yankees play in Tampa for spring training, and now the Rays will play there too. during the regular season. The hurricane from about a month ago ripped the roof off Tropicana Field in Tampa, as everybody knows, and the Rays were looking for a new home, and they found it. They will play at Steinbrenner Field, the spring training home of the New York Yankees. It is the biggest spring training field by a lot because it is the Yankees. I think it's about 11,000, 12,000. Sure. Whatever.
It's going to
be so ugly. It's going to be so bizarre, so weird.
Yeah.
The park factors are going to be fascinating. There are going to be so many rain delays because it rains a lot there in Tampa, in Florida, and there's no roof on this place. And it will be a cool atmosphere, I guess. Like, it won't feel big in the way that the Trop does. It won't feel big league in an unfortunate way for visiting teams. But, like, getting to watch Aaron Judge in a basically a minor league park will be fascinating.
I mean, right. We see it in spring training. Notably, Steinbrenner Field has literally the same exact dimensions as Yankee Stadium. So prepare for the short porch discourse that will be kind of joining us with the Rays playing in Steinbrenner Field for, I understand, to be all of 2025. So that is going to be very, very, very interesting. Jake, my ugla, to finish this off before we say goodbye, is Mr. Rich Hill, as you just mentioned, pitching for the Premier 12 Team USA team. And this is ugly because Rich Hill yesterday, I believe, threw 3 1/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, no walks against Mexico to help Team USA advance to the semifinal round. And all I'm just going to say is that I just need to read this headline on MLB Trade Rumors. This killed me. This is from a couple days ago. Here's the MLB Trade Rumors headline. Rich Hill open to pitching in 2025. How many more years are we going to get that headline?
Jake Mintz open to bag of money on side of highway.
Rich Hill, we love you. I do hope he pitches forever and ever and ever and ever.
Rich Hill, a great American. Is he the answer to the Democratic Party's problems? Who's to say? Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Jeff Passan for joining us on this episode. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You, the listener, can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We will be back in your ear holes on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody.